thin. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays from 11 to midnight. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station.
How true, how true. You could, you could. Well, in any case, the thing I guess I want to talk about is that I was listening to talk radio today a little bit, and as I'm flipping the dial, I come across L. Rushbo, the Rush Limbaugh program, as it will happen to us. And it was a little bit weird. Rush came on, and he started talking about, as I tuned in, he was in the middle of a discussion of what causes tornadoes and the cold weather that it takes for tornadoes. And I was a little surprised because he isn't usually this detailed. He usually is talking in generalities and he's usually harping on something. But it was leading up to something. He was trying to prove that global warming isn't real, since it takes a lot of cold air to cause tornadoes. These are cold pockets of cold air that mix with warm air that do this, he was explaining. And therefore, global warming can't be real. And I just sat there in amazement at the way global warming skeptics deal with the issue. Right? Let's recap the bidding. There are 5 or 6 major lines of literature in the published literature that touch on global warming. They come from a variety of sources in the journals on climate change and atmospherics and weather and all of that. And a lot of them are based on models and projections and all of that. But it's very sophisticated computer analysis. You and I, unless you are in one of these fields, you and I can have a discussion at a cocktail party or on the air about global warming, but let's not pretend we understand the literature, right? I can understand a summary of the literature. I can understand what they're saying, but we're not really qualified to evaluate that literature, right? But I do respect tradition and authority in general, and authority has something to say here. The experts are experts for a reason, whether they're in the field of science or they're in the field of law, right? We defer to the Supreme Court as our experts, or lawyers as our experts when it comes to law. We defer to doctors when it comes to medicine, right? But for some reason, when it comes to science, there's a whole percentage of this country that isn't willing to defer to experts. Now, it's fine if you want to question conventional wisdom at some level, but let's marshal some reasonable arguments. And so what we see in the global warming battle is this very silly things like, well, it's a cooler than average summer, and yet people say there's global warming, so isn't that funny? It can't possibly be. No, that's not evidence. That is what's known as anecdotal evidence. Anecdotal evidence is one of the surest ways to get misled as to what's really going on. Anecdotal evidence is not a trend, typically. Anyway, it's just funny but that's what the global warming debate has been reduced to. And I wasn't going to get into politics until a little later in the hour, but I might as well, because I was also listening on the way in tonight to, I forget who's substituting for one of the talk shows, one of the conservative talk shows. But basically, he was addressing John McCain's speech today. McCain gave a speech, and he addressed global warming. Basically, he's trying to get back towards the center and not be tied to the fringe position that the Bush administration has. And actually, Bush has come a little bit back towards the center on global warming. And McCain basically said, we are not going to spend, I'm not going to spend the next 8 years with my head in the sand and not making progress on global warming. Well, that, of course, has conservatives up in arms. One of the things they don't like about McCain is that he is not an orthodox conservative on a bunch of issues. Global warming, immigration being two of the main ones. And it drives them crazy. And so they will go out there and call it a hoax, as Senator Inhofe does. And we don't have to spend a lot of time on that tonight. But it's just amazing to see people tie themselves in knots and argue about an issue that, frankly, they're not qualified to comment on. That is, they don't really know the evidence. And, you know, I don't know the evidence either, but I do know that 99% of the experts are on one side of the issue. And so to pretend that we've got, well, we've got a controversy here, we aren't certain. Yeah, around the margins, we aren't certain, and that's because we're not certain about anything in science. At that level, that there's always uncertainty in science. Yes, there's uncertainty in global warming. We don't know exactly what the extent of it will be. We don't know exactly how much we can affect it at this point. But there's this whole group on the far right that wants to stick its head in the sand about a variety of issues, including global warming. And that's why I think they're going to they're going to have a sad wake-up call this year in the election. You know, I've been predicting this for some time, but what's going to be interesting to watch is that when Obama beats McCain, and I think he will, conservatives will say, see, we told you that Republicans needed to nominate a true conservative. And so the lesson they're going to take out of a loss from McCain, assuming it happens, and it may not, but assuming it happens, the lesson they'll take out of that is that their guy was too liberal. They needed a true conservative. He wasn't a real Republican. Wrong lesson. If they go and in 4 years nominate a more conservative Republican than McCain, they'll lose even worse. You've got to come back towards the middle if you want to get elected, right? So we'll see how it goes, but we'll get to the election in the next segment. And let's see. Oh, I don't think I need to talk about this esoteric stuff with the special counsel. I have to admit, I'll just say this. I don't fully understand what's going on with the case here of special counsel Scott Bloch, B-L-O-C-H. He's been investigated since last September by the U.S. Office of Special Counsel. And the career investigators there opened a probe into, I'm sorry, I'm misstating this. He's in that office, and he has opened a variety of probes and then closed some of them down, including one into whether or not the Justice Department's prosecution of the Democrat and former Alabama Governor Don Seligman in 2006 was politically motivated. They put the guy in prison, and it helped win an election for Republicans. And they opened a case, and then they closed it. and it was Scott Bloch that ordered it closed. Now, the reason I say I'm confused is that not every one of his moves seems as apparently biased towards the current administration as, let's say, the kinds of things that Alberto Gonzalez did. I can't think of one situation where Alberto Gonzalez showed political courage and stood up to Bush and Cheney and the Bush administration. He never showed his independence. He always carried their water. And so if Scott Bloch were investigated for always carrying the Bush administration's water, then I'd say I understand the case. Unfortunately, there's been at least two or three situations that, as near as I can tell, it's a little counterintuitive. He stood up to the administration, and he's being investigated for that. So it's not clear to me who's investigating him and exactly what he's done wrong, but I just maybe haven't read enough about it. In any case, he has, I forgot if he stepped down. No, I know what happened. Last week, FBI agents raided his office and raided his home, and so it is a pretty serious investigation. This is criminal wrongdoing when the FBI gets a warrant and confiscates some evidence from your office and your home. So we'll have to see how that plays out. I will keep you updated. I need to get on top of that issue. I just don't understand enough about it. There's a disturbing article in the Washington Post today that is something I've been wondering about for some time. And basically, it talks about how NASA is worried about relying on the Russians and the Soyuz space capsule for shuttling our astronauts and their astronauts to the space station. Essentially, we're going to retire the space shuttle in 2010. Of course, it's been around and in service for, I don't know, 34 years by then. I think it started in 76 or something. And the difficulty is that we won't have the next generation space flight, human space capsule, ready until at least 2015. So here's the United States, the preeminent technology country. For 5 years, we don't have a way to put humans into space. Well, that hasn't happened since 1969. And we're relying on the Russians to do this. So there's a couple of angles here. The first is the article in the paper talks about the fact that they've had a couple of perilous landings. Although the Soyuz capsule's been pretty safe, they've had a couple of close calls or scares on landings, and that's a problem. But the bigger issue to me is psychological. Why would the United States of America allow this kind of a gap to occur where we are dependent on the Russians to provide our options for us? Keep in mind, when we lost one of the space shuttles recently, the program gets shut down for a year or two while you figure out what happened. Well, if the same thing happened on the Russian side, we'd be out of luck. You need two ways to get up there so that if one of them gets derailed, you still have a backup, or you're leaving people in space for a year or more, if that's even possible, without any resupply missions. It's just pretty dangerous. So anyway, I've been amazed for years that we've been willing to allow this, but we do seem to be willing to allow it. And given that we're willing to allow it, I just think it's kind of weird that we're at the mercy of the Russians, who Vladimir Putin, despite Bush having looked into his soul, he has demonstrated that he's willing to blackmail countries over energy. Why wouldn't he be willing to blackmail us over this? I just don't know. We'll be back after this on The Andy Finn Show at WEBR Radio.
Get your hands off that mouse. The Andy Finn Show will be right back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah!
I've often thought that if our brains got physically larger the more we exercised them, that instead of going to the gym to pump iron, people would go to the library to pump ideas in order to impress the opposite sex.
Look at the brain on that stud.
Have you ever seen a brain that big?
Look at that guy. He's huge.
I gotta start working on my head.
Wow. I'd like to wake up next to that brain every morning.
So tune in The Andy Finn Show and grow your brain. It's the only one you've got.
Listen to The Andy Finn Show at andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us.
We are back on The Andy Finn Show, and today is May 12th. This was the day that the odometer was invented. And can you guess what year the odometer was invented? Keep in mind what an odometer is. It's not something that measures odors. It is something that measures miles or meters, depending on what kind of car you're driving. You won't believe how long ago it was, since we think of the first automobiles as coming in around the turn of the 20th century, maybe 1895. The odometer was invented in 1847. Of course, it could be used on carriages or bicycles or whatever they wanted. Also, this was the day that the Soviet Union announced it was ending the Berlin blockade. If you remember, they tried to blockade Berlin back in the late 1940s is when I'm thinking. In 1949 this happened. They tried it again in the 60s, and then Kennedy had the Berlin airlift. But this was the one back in the 40s. And it's the birthday of, well, several famous people. It's the birthday of George Carlin, 1937, and the birthday of Yogi Berra. Yogi was born in 1925, so he is 83, who said, well, he said a lot of different things. And in fact, he's credited with saying some things he never actually said. But one of my favorite yogiisms is, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. That is a legitimate yogiism. There's another one that's bothered me for some time, because the original expression seems to have lost all meaning. Whenever anyone talks about deja vu, these days they say it's deja vu all over again. Because I think Yogi said that. I think that is a legitimate yogiism. But what makes it a yogiism is that it is redundant. What makes it redundant is deja vu by itself means I've had this experience before. So deja vu all over again is I've had this experience before and I'm having it all over again. It doesn't make any sense. And yet I never hear anyone anymore say it's deja vu. They always add now, it's deja vu all over again. So that's just weird to me, but that's the way it is. And let's see. You know, I want to move on and talk a little bit about right-wing talk show hosts today. And this comes up in the form of Bill O'Reilly. Now, O'Reilly often has Dick Morris on. And, of course, they sometimes bill him as a former Clinton strategist. But Dick Morris is a Republican, has always been a Republican. He really dislikes the Clintons, particularly Hillary, but he dislikes Democrats. And he's anything but fair, all right? But I heard him say something that was as ridiculous as anything I've heard a right-winger say this year, with the exception of a few of Michael Savage's more insane statements. And it takes about 50 seconds to get into it here. But basically, he says that the election doesn't hinge on McCain. McCain is kind of a known. And so, you know, there may be a couple of up and downs, but he's kind of the steady thing in the middle. Obama's on either side. He'll go back and forth. The public's view of him will go back and forth. And the question is whether we believe that Obama is sort of a sleeper agent who doesn't really believe in our system. And I guess he must be getting this from this notion that Reverend Wright has criticized America. So if you criticize America, you must not believe in our system. But the idea that someone with a brain, a reputable person, somebody they put on TV, and I guess that makes him reputable, would sit there and question whether or not he believes in our system. Well, you hear it all the time. You know, Aunt Limbaugh used to say that Hillary was a socialist. All right. Now, that's really absurd. Socialist suggests doesn't believe in the free enterprise system. We don't have anyone in politics, with the exception of a few actually avowed socialists, that would say, I don't believe in the free enterprise system. Now, you may want to put limits on the free enterprise system. All right. I think the free enterprise system needs limits. You're always going to have some limits. The question is how many limits. So we will see what comes of this. But let's go back to O'Reilly. And this is from last week on May 7th. Morris appeared. And it takes about 50 seconds to get to this. But let's listen to him explain to us that Obama may not actually believe in our system. I guess he means our system of government. He doesn't believe in the United States. And so whether we elect him or not will depend on whether people believe that he thinks, whether they believe that he believes in the United States. It's really rather silly, but let's listen.
Look, any story that comes across our desk that we feel folks should know about, we're going
to
break.
My point.
Oh, so I need to stop right there and back up with Bill O'Reilly. So he starts in this clip. And I remember seeing this on the show that night. He said, you know, he's covering the heck out of Reverend Wright and out of Bill Ayers and trying to tar Obama by association with the views of other people that O'Reilly thinks are outrageous. And so he starts this conversation by saying, anybody who we think the people ought to know about, we'll report on. In other words, if John McCain did or said anything that is outrageous, we'd get on that too. It just happens that only Democrats say things that are outrageous.
Yeah. Look, any story that comes across our desk that we feel folks should know about, we're going to break.
My point is that the source of negatives against Obama in this race is not John McCain. It's going to be the conservative media. And you're going, and the liberal media is sort of out to lunch, and they only cover it after a couple of weeks, and then
they mess it up. Wait a minute, you're diminishing the liberal media. That's a huge machine. NBC, CNN, New York Times will be outwardly rooting for Barack Obama. They will ruthlessly cut up John McCain. I don't think you just dismiss that.
There'll be a lot of that, but John McCain is a given in this race.
So I'm going to stop before he gets to this remark that's so ridiculous. Naturally, when you're on the far right, you think that people that are near the center are more extreme than they are. So this idea that any particular news outlet that's, you know, a reputable journalistic outlet is going to be harder on Obama than McCain, let's just assume those are the two candidates, that's a fundamental misreading of journalism. People are responsible for their own campaigns in general, right? McCain has gotten very favorable coverage so far. He's not been put under a microscope so far. The far left is complaining bitterly about how he's being covered by the mainstream journalistic outlets, from the New York Times and the Washington Post on down to the networks. Now, he'll get tougher coverage as there's more scrutiny and as it becomes clear it's him versus the Democrat, assuming it's Obama. And then when he gets tougher coverage, the far right will squeal like a stuck pig because they always complain about the media. That is their big bugaboo, is the liberal media. You know, if they didn't have that to complain about, they would find some other way not to take responsibility for their viewpoint. But they've been using that saw for a long time. So I think we'll spend a little time on that today. But let's go on. Here's the wisdom of Dick Morris explaining that the country has to decide whether they think Obama believes in our system of government, I guess he means, our system, whatever he means by our system.
The variant is Barack Obama. John McCain is like the lever in the middle, and Obama's positives and negatives seesaw, and that will determine the race. And the determinant in the election will be whether we believe that Barack Obama is what he appears to be, or is he somebody who's sort of a sleeper agent who really doesn't believe in our system and is more in line with right's views?
Does America think he's a sleeper cell? I mean, that's a reference to terrorism when you think about it, right? And so a sleeper agent, okay, who really doesn't believe in our system and is more in line with right's views. This is Reverend Wright. But the idea that you take Barack Obama and call him a sleeper agent is just so insidious. And does Bill O'Reilly have any problem with that? No, it wouldn't occur to Bill O'Reilly to call Dick Morris on this because they're in tune.
And that dialogue is going to be the key event that's going to be going on over the summer. And Obama has to win that dialogue. The reason Obama won North Carolina and almost won Indiana was not that his campaign was great or Hillary was bad or nobody bought the gas tax. It was that he answered Reverend Wright. And that answer really was effective and productive and really good. Now, but it's not going to stand the test of time. Because this guy who used to have to convince people he wasn't a Muslim.
Now, that's an interesting comment. Why would he have to convince people he wasn't a Muslim? He's a Christian. This is what's so interesting is they're trying to tie him now to a Christian preacher and saying he's been going to this church for the last 20 years. But at times they're trying to tie him to the idea that maybe he's a Muslim. Maybe he's a sleeper agent. It's all very bizarre.
Now he's electable only if he can convince people he never goes to church. Because he has got to persuade people that he wasn't in the pew when Wright talked about his stuff.
Interesting. Now, if you're advising Barack Obama, he's got to, as you said, and I agree with you, I don't think it's Reverend Wright. Or I think Reverend Wright's over, unless there's some other crazy thing that comes out. But I do think it's the race thing.
Well, the way...
How do you handle that thing?
Obama got into the election and was...
Actually, I can't take any more Dick Morris, so we're going to stop that there. So, you know, you'll get what you get when you get, you know, two conservative ideologues together. And you know, O'Reilly doesn't, for all his talk of being fair and we're going to cover both sides, he doesn't bring on anyone that seriously disagrees with him. And if he does, he's challenging them from the first moment. When he gets a Dick Morris on, he lets him say what he wants and he never challenges them. So you don't get too much of use out of that, but I just thought it was worth listening to Dick Morris explain that the country has to decide if Obama's a sleeper agent. Isn't that interesting? That's what passes for dialogue these days. Oh, well, that's just the way it is. When the Andy Finn Show comes back on WEBR, we're going to talk a little bit more about the campaign and maybe a little bit more about the liberal media.